you always have this, you know, people are naturally talented and good genetics and stuff, you know, but in my experience, those are the ones that fall off the wagon the easiest.
Yo, gorillas, welcome to the Athlete Insider podcast by Gor Nation. My name is Phil, and today's guest is somebody who was often requested in the comments, the Norwegian mover, and somebody who often shocks the calisthenics scene, the hand balancing scene, with some really, really impressive skills in hand balancing and calisthenics. I'm really happy to welcome you to the show, Sondre Berg.
Thank you, Philip. It's an honor to get invited, and nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you as well. You're like a really, let's say, different athlete, a really versatile athlete. You seem to combine a lot of stuff. So I'm really looking forward to look a little bit deeper in your head, into your workout advice, workout schedule, etc. To kick off, who is Sondre? How do you present yourself?
Have been doing calisthenics, street workout, movement, you name it, for about 9 years now.
Wow.
So it's been a while. It's been a journey. Yeah. In the beginning, I didn't really realize that it was a thing. You know, I was lifting some weights, you know, being an average gym goer, nothing special, for a few years, just because I wanted to pack on some muscles and stuff, you know. The regular thing. And I mean, at some point I just got demotivated. It wasn't really any fun. And I remember watching YouTube videos of people doing like human flags and muscle ups and stuff. And I was like, I got to learn this shit. And I mean, from there, it just kept on rolling. I was like, I started just wanting to do like a human flag was my main goal, because I think it looked so cool. And a handstand push-up, that was like my main two goals in the beginning. And then I had to learn a handstand in order to do a handstand push-up, you know. And then I learned a human flag and then muscle up. And I didn't really realize that it was a thing until I met some other people doing the stuff. And they were like, yeah, we're doing street workout. And I was like, street workout? What the fuck is that? Mm-hmm. And, you know, from there, I was just totally hooked, and it was everything, all that I was doing. At some point I started competing, and within 3 or 4 years, I think I won the nationals, and then at some international competitions in Hong Kong, in Beijing, for the super finals in 2015 or 16, I think. I don't remember. But lately, though, I haven't really been competing and doing street workout that much, because at some point I sort of lost the joy of training for competitions, because there were so many other things that I wanted to learn and focus on. So I sort of felt like distracted from my own goals when I had to prepare for competitions. So I sort of moved a bit away from the street workout scene, so to say, and getting more into like movement and hand balancing, and still doing a lot of body weight strength training, but sort of combining it and trying to be creative and just exploring my own thing, you know. That was basically my story with movement.
But, wow. 9 years in the game, 9 years of movement. I think I could have expected it, because your performances are really insane. I watched your last posts, insane stuff. For example, I don't know nine handstand clapping push-ups. This is stuff that is really, really impressive. And how old are you right now?
I'm 29.
29, so you started with 20, so not even like as a kid or something.
No, I was before that. I mentioned I had like a few years of being a couple of years, 3 years maybe, of just being like an average gym goer, just mm-hmm. going to the gym every now and then, lifting some weights, but nothing really special there. But from I guess I was 10 years old. I was a skater kid. I mean, I was competing in skateboarding, and skateboarding was like my whole life up until I started university, more or less. And I started struggling with injuries and stuff, and sort of needed a new addiction. And somehow I stumbled upon this movement, street workout things. Yeah, and the ball just kept rolling in. Yeah.
It sort of got... Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so it was sort of my new skateboarding.
Yeah, because I see a lot of people switching from skateboarding to street workout because it's not only a sport, I guess. I didn't skate myself, but it seems like you switch from really a lifestyle, something that you do in your free time, and it's not workout, but it's like a lifestyle. It's how you spend your time with friends, etc.
Yeah, it's much more than just working out. Yes, indeed.
Okay. Right now, 29 years old, coming to the hard facts, how heavy and how tall are you?
I'm 179 centimeters and usually around 80 kilos. So between 78 and 82, depending on
the Christmas time.
Yeah. Like now I'm pretty heavy. Now I'm almost 82.
Okay.
You know, a lot of family dinners and a lot of nice food and some beer and, you know, but it's how it is.
And you don't feel your performance dropping, right? Because the posts in the last day, they are like from now.
Oh, yeah, they're from now. But obviously, when I'm a bit heavier, some of the moves are noticeably more difficult, like planches and one-arm pull-ups. Those are probably the moves I notice it the most on.
Okay.
But I know that when New Year's is over and I'm back at it, it's going to drop down pretty quickly again. So I'm not too worried about it.
Good.
So it's sort of like putting on a 4 kilo weight vest for
yes,
a
for
month
free
or so, and then
true. Yeah. Can you take us with like 9 years ago? You started with calisthenics, with a street workout. You had like 3 years of basic strength training in the gym. How did your beginning in street workout go? Did it go easy? Were you already able to do some pull-ups? How was the beginning?
Well, for me, pulling exercises has always been like a weak spot. I remember pushing strength has always sort of come rather easy or easier to me. Mm-hmm. We all have our strengths, right? So I remember struggling with pull-ups like when I was younger and we were having like physical education and stuff, and I couldn't even do a pull-up. So I remember struggling hard with the pulling part. And after starting with calisthenics, it took me about a year to achieve a muscle up. Well, it took me 6 months to do a freestanding handstand push-up.
Wow.
Like I said, we're all different, and some people, they take like front levers and muscle ups and one arm pull-ups. It's rather easy for them to achieve. And some people struggle with handstand push-ups, you know. For me, that sort of road has been a lot easier, but I'm still struggling hard with the pulling exercises. I mean, I did my first proper full front lever this year after 9 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm not kidding.
Wow.
So it's obviously about a lot of things, like what you're predisposed for, like genetically, and also like the mechanical advantages of your body type. So I have rather short arms, making pushing easier because I don't have that long of a way to go in my pushing because my arms are a bit shorter. But then in front levers and planches, I need to have a much steeper angle, making the muscles much more weak in the position, so they're more difficult. And in addition to this, pulling strength has like always been super difficult for me, even though I've been working as hard with them, always working on my weak spot, obviously. But yeah,
Okay. Yeah, that's a really interesting part, because before you said that with your genetics, et cetera, I wanted to prepare the question that if it's something genetical, is it something that you can influence? Is it something that changes in your life? But it really depends on the mechanics and on the biomechanics, I guess. And you're like, you seem like a really scientific guy. It's like somebody who is really like structured, et cetera. So that's something that you analyzed yourself, or how did you get to this conclusion?
Well, I do a lot of reading, obviously, and I also have I'm engineer, mm-hmm. Electrical engineer, but we know our basic physics. So mm-hmm. some things, even though I'm not a specialist in biomechanics, you know, some things can be deduced rather simple with regular mechanical physics, you know. And obviously doing a lot of reading. It goes without saying that anyone can do most things. Some people need to work harder on some things while others take other things easier. That's how it is. But it's not like it's an excuse. I mean, I could have given up front lever after 4 years of not attaining it, but I didn't. And some people might say it's not worth it, but for me, it's important to sort of prove that I can do it, even though I have to spend 10 years.
Yeah, crazy. But it's an impressive story because, as you said, like a lot of people would give up after a few years of not attaining it. And like you're like having really good results in the pushing movements and handstand, etc. Take us to the time that you prepared for your competitions and that you took part in your first competitions, maybe also in combination with your, let's call it weakness in pulling strength. How did they go, the competitions? How was that?
My first time in the nationals, I think I got fifth place. But street workout wasn't really big in Norway. It's still not very big, but it's growing mm-hmm. like it is worldwide. I just remember being so stoked about meeting so many people, like training the same, and competition was more about just meeting people and getting inspired and stuff like this. And that's sort of what drove me to do competitions in those 3 years that I think 3 or 4 years that I was actively competing. And like you said, obviously I had some weak spots, but everyone has their weak spots. So I tried to focus on elevating my weaknesses, but still focusing on my strength. You know, I wanted to show off my style and what I was good for. And then I was just trying to be like average, struggling to be average in the parts that I was struggling with. So, okay. I was never much of a, never that good at doing like high bar freestyling mm-hmm. Either. So instead I compensated with developing like sort of like a freestyle thing on the ground, like doing flips to handstand stuff and compensating for not being that good in the bars. And yeah. I could do some pretty cool freestyle stuff on P bars as well. And then I just had to learn like 360 and some basic stuff just to do it. But that was ultimately what drove me away from competing as well, though, because I felt that I had to do a lot of things that I wasn't really enjoying when I was preparing for competitions. So that was also very ambivalent in that I loved going to competitions, meeting a lot of people and just having a good time, you know. But at the same time, I sort of started branching out and going my own directions, and I didn't really have time to focus on what it's needed in order to perform good in these competitions.
Okay. Yeah, I can well imagine, because today's competitions are like built to most competitions are built for complete athletes. So those who like combine dynamics with aesthetics. Yeah, it's hard to because when I watch your social media, you're like really focusing on the hand balancing, on the pushing part, etc. And then I can imagine that it's hard to develop and to not get, I don't know, distracted from having to focus on the competition's rules and not on your goals, on your personal goals.
Yeah, and also I've like gotten so much inspiration from other sort of movement scenes, like doing these acrobatic moves and some capoeira stuff, or even breakdancing and a lot of hand balancing stuff, like you said. So I really like exploring these different paths and sort of going with the flow there.
What athletes do you follow to get some inspiration for your next moves, etc.?
Well, there's so many. And mostly now it's athletes doing completely different stuff, like even some people doing contemporary dance and some people doing tricking and stuff like this. I like, one of my main source of inspirations from this sort of time where I was sort of developing my style was, you know, Psy Monster, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Psy Monada is, yes. He's got such a clean style, sort of a blend between calisthenics and breakdancing, and he's doing a lot of crazy stuff. He has definitely been a huge inspiration of mine. Now I take in everything I get from different places.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because like you seem really open-minded for a lot of stuff, because you're not, as I said, not too much focused on the competition's rules, but really taking some stuff from tricking, taking some stuff from breakdance, from hand balancing, and creating your own style, which you sum up in movement, I guess. Take us in your workout schedule for the week. If you want to combine so much stuff and if you have like so many things to work on, how do you put everything in one week?
I usually divide between play sessions and strength sessions, and sometimes mobility and hand balancing sessions as well. Often I do two workouts a day. I'm doing a PhD, so I sort of have to be at the office like 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. But usually I take like an hour lunch break where I go do an hour of mobility and handstanding at the gym right next to the university.
Mm-hmm.
And then I usually have a workout in the evening. Five or six times a week, that would be like proper strength workout, focusing on my main strength goals, you know, training for planches, front levers, handstand push-up variations, and stuff like this. Sometimes I go to like a gymnastic gym to do some tricking or acrobatic stuff and practice my acrobatics in a safe environment. Mm-hmm. And usually I have a couple of times a week with climbing as well, because I'm really happy to be climbing as well.
Wow.
And I mean you get pretty strong from doing climbing and bouldering as well.
Yeah.
So it's sort of complementary, and it's also a way of moving in the walls, obviously, but so much fun.
That's true. It always impresses me when I like watch the Ninja Warrior stuff, where the climbers and the boulderers are really the ones who are like having it so easy with some obstacles, where like calisthenics athletes or I don't know what other sports like have it really, really difficult. But all this grip strength, hand strength, but also like the scapula stuff, that's really impressive for that. Crazy. So you sacrifice your lunch for a workout.
Well, yeah, obviously I eat also, though, but instead of sitting down and eating for half an hour, I maybe throw down a couple of boiled eggs and go do some handstanding instead.
Wow. Yeah, impressive. Yeah, the results that you have, it's really impressive to see. And what do you think is your secret? Is it your genetics? Is it your discipline? Is it your nutrition? Is it your workout approach, scientific workout schedule, etc.? What is it that makes you this strong?
I would go with consistency. And obviously smart training, motivation, and having fun. Like, obviously, when you're doing a hard strength workout, it's not always fun. But what you achieve in the long term is a lot of fun, and what you can do with this strength. So I think for me to stay motivated, that has sort of been the secret. To focus on using this strength to do something that I think is a lot of fun, and to use it to do other things than just doing, for example, if I'm training handstand push-ups, I can use handstand push-ups in being creative in my movement in other sorts of moves, and sort of seeing a relationship between me building a stronger body and being able to move differently. And my ultimate goal has sort of been to just be able to do whatever I want with my body, if you know what I'm saying. I want to like see somebody do something, and I'm like, I can do that. Just need a couple of weeks to get the technique right. Or just when I'm laying in my bed, just daydreaming, and just some moves pop up into my head, and I'm like, yeah, I can do that. If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. So you want to prepare your body for the stuff that you want to do, like to be really versatile, and to be able to do a lot of stuff at the same time.
Yeah.
Because maybe that's also something that drove you away from fitness training, because I feel that, fitness training, a lot of people are going away from it because it's quite monotone and you do the same thing the whole time. But it also often you feel that it's strength that you can't really use in daily life, or that doesn't really support you in achieving your goals.
Yeah, well, I'm not to say that all of that is inferior. It's just that for me, it doesn't work. But I think that as long as people are active and do something they think is fun, or that they can stay motivated, then it's perfect. We all have different goals, right? So, and I think there's a lot of people who just hasn't found their thing yet. Because a lot of people, they don't exercise because they think it's boring. But there are 10,000 different way of exercising. I mean, doing team sports or doing fitness or doing parkour or dancing. I mean, everyone thinks exercising is fun. They just haven't found their sort of way yet. So I think it's important to explore.
Yeah, because that's really already a takeaway from me. A lot of athletes say that you need discipline, and I think it's true, but you can also support discipline or support your body being able to show more discipline if you just have fun during your workout. And for example, if you would have stuck with your professional calisthenics career, like competing and learning dynamics, learning front lever pull-ups, whatever, you would need a lot of discipline because your body doesn't, you don't feel like it's the best thing for you. But if you exchange like discipline a little bit for fun, that you do whatever you want to do, I think you need less discipline, you need less willpower because you like to go to workout.
Yeah, I think it's important to find like a sweet spot and a balance that makes you motivated and in continuing.
Yeah.
Because in the long term, those that get good are those that stick with it for a long time. And you always have this, you know, people are naturally talented and good genetics and stuff, you know, but in my experience, those are the ones that fall off the wagon the easiest, because when the going gets tough, they're not used to working hard, and for them it gets boring because they actually have to put in a lot of hard work to get at a certain level. So they like reach like an advanced level super fast. And then they're like, they realize that in order to get better, they have to put in so much work, and that's not something they're used to.
Yeah.
So I think those that get far are the ones that are able to keep motivated and push themselves.
True. Yeah, there are a lot of listeners, I guess, who are interested in your handstand secrets, let's call them. And you also made a course about it. Do you want to take us maybe a little bit in detail what people can improve in their handstand, and maybe also in combination with your handstand course that you have on your website, etc., that people can check out to learn more from you?
Yeah, well, I guess my approach to hand balancing is a bit different because obviously to get a perfect handstand, there's so many things that needs to be in place, right? You have you need the strength, you need the mobility and balance and technique and all this stuff, you know, but I think people generally, or not everyone, but a lot of people, they tend to overthink it and focus on, for example, the perfect form way too soon in their journey. And obviously, a lot of people will decapitate me for saying this, but I'm not saying that a good form is not important, because it is, especially if you want to take your handstands and your hand balancing to a high level at some point. But what people also need to realize is that there are some limits regarding mobility, especially shoulder mobility, for example, that can take a year or even more to achieve the mobility needed to do a perfect handstand. So it's basically impossible to do a perfect handstand without this mobility, right? So there's not really any point in trying to enter a perfect position if your body's not capable of it. So you obviously need to work on this mobility on the side, but focusing on actually getting comfortable upside down, learning to balance, and just being in the position and getting really good at balancing, that should be like the main priority. And obviously focusing on mobility and all of this stuff on the side, and then applying it to your handstand once your handstand is stable enough to think of more than just balancing. Because, you know, if you're already struggling to balance for 5 to 10 seconds, your brain is working at 100 CPU just to stay there. Yeah. And if you're trying to introduce tilt your pelvis, and people talk about stomach in and all of this stuff, if you're trying to implement this into your handstand when you're already at 100 CPU doing your balancing, you're not going to get much out of it. So I think that's generally a problem, because it is important and you need to work on it, but there's no point in trying to do something your body's not capable of. Mm-hmm. And sort of punishing yourself, like, oh, my form is so shit, I need to do this. So everything you're thinking about when you're handstanding is doing something that you're not really mechanically capable of because you lack the mobility. So do your handstanding, learn to balance, focus on that stuff. And then on the side, you work on mobility so that you can eventually be able to enter this perfect handstand position. And also, a lot of people tend to be a bit egocentric in their training, because when they can balance a handstand for 5 seconds, they never use the wall again. Mm-hmm. And the wall is your friend. That's where you should do your mobility, or not your mobility, but your form correcting exercises. That's where you learn to enter a good form handstand. And then you implement that into your freestanding handstand. When your freestanding handstand is good enough for you to be thinking of more than just keeping balance.
It's totally relatable. I see a lot of people, because like a lot of coaches, etc., are telling you have the handstand has to be perfect, and this is the way how it's perfect. The head on the chest, like really advanced.
That's the worst tip ever given to anyone, and it's from gymnastics. Mm-hmm. And they teach the kids this because kids have a tendency to flare their head out when they're looking down. Mm-hmm. But never ever should you learn a handstand looking anywhere else than between your hands in the ground.
Okay, so not even the head straight.
Well, you could at some point focus on tucking in your head a bit, but mm-hmm. If you're looking in between your hands, between your thumbs, more or less, your head won't be flaring that much out. Mm-hmm. So if you just look at that spot, then you shouldn't think too much about your head.
Okay.
In my opinion, because looking like straight backwards or upwards, that's like an advanced hand balancing skill. Yeah. And you shouldn't be even thinking about chasing it before you can do like 30, 60 seconds of a regular handstand.
Yeah.
And it will have no mechanical advantage either.
Okay.
It just sort of feels easier to enter a good form in that position. But yeah.
Okay. The question that maybe some people have in their heads now, aren't you afraid of injuries when you first practice not the perfect form? What can you tell to these people or to these doubts?
Well, handstand related injuries, in my experience, I mean, I've been coaching people from scratch for 5 years. At least a couple hundred people. And in my opinion, handstand related injuries are almost always in the wrists. And you won't get more tension on your wrist from doing a not perfect formed handstand. I mean, some people I've heard saying that if you have an arched back, then you will get a back injury. But just to illustrate, I can stand like this for 3 minutes and it's not really hurting my body, right? Mm-hmm. So you won't get a lot of tension on your back from a not good formed handstand. The most important thing in preventing handstand injuries is strengthening your wrists, which a lot of people tend to overlook. Mm-hmm. So from the beginning, from my first years even, I remember doing a lot of research because I always do that when approaching new moves. So I probably looked through all of the handstand material available at that time. And I, at that time, I started doing wrist strengthening exercises. And I have never had any wrist problems whatsoever. And I always teach this to all of the people I teach handstanding to. General wrist conditioning is the best thing you do to prevent handstand injuries. And you need to stick to it.
Yeah.
And you need to also ensure progress and progressively increase the load on your wrists as well, so that they actually get stronger. I mean, you can do the same thing for 10 years without getting stronger if you don't apply more pressure along the way.
True. Okay.
So, yeah.
What role do basics play in this, like push-ups, pull-ups, dips, etc.?
Well, having strong shoulders and a strong core is a big advantage because you can get away with not having a perfect form because you're strong enough to hold it. Some people would say that this is the wrong way of looking at it, but I think not, because for me that has also been like a thing, because I've always been quite strong. So for me to enter a new position, I can get away with not doing the technique perfect because I'm strong enough to sort of cheat my way into the position. Mm-hmm. And then once I'm able to hold this position, I can focus on perfecting the form and making it efficient, which is much easier if you're already able to enter the position, right?
Yeah.
So obviously I'm not, I think good form and technique is very important, but I don't think it comes first. It comes second, not just because it's sometimes easier to approach it in this way, but also because motivation is a big factor. I mean, you can spend 1 year preparing your body so that you eventually will be able to enter a perfect handstand form, or you can learn to handstand imperfectly within a few months and then spend the next 9 months doing handstands and having fun while developing this handstand into a perfect handstand, if you get the idea.
Yeah. Makes sense. So do you still do basics in your workouts today?
Well, what's basics anyways? like regular push-ups, dips, pull-ups?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Why?
Well, I can do them for warm-up.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's any fun.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, at some point when you can, for example, push-ups, if you can do like 50, 60, 70 push-ups, for me, it doesn't make any sense towards my goals, because mm-hmm. I want to get strong. I want to focus on maximum strength.
Mm-hmm.
So I always develop all of my moves in a way that makes them more and more difficult. Progressively more difficult, so that I'm always, and I also never liked repping.
Okay.
I like working maximum strength. and not too much repping. Also because I don't want to, I try not to focus too much on hypertrophy training, because getting big is not really an advantage in this game. It's better to focus on strengthening strengthening your muscles, your ligaments, your joints, your nervous system, and focusing on pure strength. At least that's what I think is fun and motivating. But okay. Obviously, if a lot of people want to focus on packing on muscle and stuff, and if that's the case, then doing basics and higher rep schemes and focusing on hypertrophy training, it does make a lot of sense.
Okay, cool. Also, a role in your career as an athlete, I think, plays your nutrition. So maybe let's go a few weeks before Christmas. Now, what do you usually eat, and how is your nutrition?
Well, through my years of being an athlete, I've experimented with a lot of things. You know, I've been doing low carb, I've been doing no carb, I've been doing slow carb, I've been doing high carb, high protein. You know, I've been trying all of this stuff, thinking that it matters a lot. But in the end, I don't feel that it do. Mm-hmm. As long as I generally eat healthy and get my macros properly. I mean, I sort of found it pointless to obsess over dieting. Mm-hmm. Because I remember learning quite early that dieting is like 80% of fitness, stuff like this, and mm-hmm. such bullshit.
Okay.
I mean, at some point, if you're doing like bodybuilding and you're doing professional sports, then it might be the thing that differentiates you from the other ones in the top level, you know. And it's obviously important to be healthy, like generally, but I don't think that, for me, it's not worth obsessing over, because actually spending time working out is what's going to get you there. Mm-hmm. So I feel like a lot of people focus too much on things that matter less. And obviously it does matter to have a good diet. But it's not like having a good diet will make you super strong, super fast. I mean, working out consistently will make you super strong. Okay. And dieting will most likely make it a bit more efficient. Mm-hmm. But you will never, it's not like you can just have a good diet and do one workout a week and that's enough. I mean,
okay.
Yeah.
Do you have some standards in eating? I don't know, not eating this and this.
Based on my own preferences, I do, because I notice eating sugars, I don't feel well. Mm-hmm. And I don't perform well. Obviously, I eat sugars, but eating like a lot of sugars makes me feel bad. Mm-hmm. So I try to stay away from it. Generally, obviously, I like the milk chocolate every now and then. I also noticed that I get generally a better energy level and less energy swings when eating more. Not too much fast carbs. Mm-hmm. So whole foods in general. Mm-hmm. And I also don't respond very well to flour, like wheat mm-hmm. flour.
Mm-hmm.
I get like a bit bloated and yeah, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I generally stay away from bread and stuff like this. Also generally, like now when it's Christmas, I'm home at my parents' place and they get like new, like fresh bread every day, and fresh bread is nice.
Yeah, good for you.
So, but yeah, it's all like in a general sense. And every now and then on a Sunday, I can get some nice bread to sort of just have a nice Sunday breakfast, you know. But in a general manner, I stay away from sugars and bread, and eat a lot of whole food.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A lot of eggs.
Okay. Yeah, eggs. Me too. Eggs are good.
Yeah.
Nice. Do you take any supplements? Because people are always asking about supplements.
No. I mean, I do have protein powder available, and sometimes I take it with me when I'm going hiking, or when I know that I won't have time to make a proper meal, then it can be a nice replacement or addition to, you know, some, if I bring some bananas, an apple, a couple of eggs, and a small bag of protein powder, then I know I'm set for the next 8 hours. But it's not like I take 2 protein shakes a day or something. No.
Okay.
And also, if I am in a hurry and I just need something to fill my stomach with, like super fast, then it's also a nice alternative. But I generally like making food and mm-hmm. good tasting food. And I think that eating proper food is nice.
True. Talking about the next topic, injuries. What kind of injuries did you have in your career? You're doing a lot of stuff that is really putting a lot of pressure on the wrist, on the shoulders, etc., on the elbows. Did you have any injuries?
I always have an injury. I can't remember the last time I didn't have an injury.
Okay.
I mean, at some point when you're at some level, it's to expect to get an injury every now and then. Sometimes it can be like I pull a muscle and it goes over in a week or so. I have this weird thing. I always, or not always, but often I pull my lats. I get this sort of sore lats especially if I try doing planches mm-hmm. without warming up.
Okay.
And it's incredible how you can do that when you know that this will happen, even though I've been doing this for 9 years and I'm like, yeah. But I've had quite a few more serious injuries than that, though. Some are actually permanent as well. In a competition in Hong Kong, I think it was 2015 or 16, I did like a one arm kipping muscle up to a 360, and my 360 sort of went a bit wrong. So when I caught the bar, I didn't have any time to sort of dampen the movement. So I sort of just got this really jerky landing. And because it was in a competition, I was full of adrenaline and stuff. I didn't really notice it. And I finished, and I actually won the World Cup stage there.
Wow.
So I was like super happy and I didn't really notice it. But I woke up the next morning and both my arms, I couldn't lift them up. And my shoulders were totally fucked for 3 months, I think. And ever after that, that's like 5 years ago, I'm still having pain in my shoulders. So I did a lot of x-rays and MRIs and stuff like this. And it turns out my labrum has broken in on the backside of the joint. Mm-hmm. And it's not really, I was told that if it doesn't heal by itself within the first few months, then it won't heal. So it would need surgery to heal. But luckily for me, it's a very restricted range of motion that hurts for me. And it's like whenever my elbow is behind my back, mm-hmm. and I need to use my bicep. So, you know, classical sort of Hephaisto movement, Hephaisto, right? Yeah. or if I do supinated back levers, I can't do that at all. Okay. It sort of just pinges back here and it just, I lose all power. Mm-hmm. So at that time, I learned my first Hephaisto a few months before that. And I was never able to train it again.
Oh, damn it.
So because I knew that if I was going to do the operation or the surgery, then it would take a year to sort of before I could start training properly again. And then it would take probably 1 year more to get back where I was. And I can definitely live with this. I just need to stay away from that exact movement. And in the end, it sort of turned out in a good way also, because I wasn't able to train for Hephaestos, I sort of wanted to train for an alternative. So I started training for inverted muscle ups, mm-hmm. which is also a bicep intense move, right? It's sort of the same, just in front of your body. Yeah. So I don't need to get my elbows in the back here. Mm-hmm. And that way it doesn't hurt my shoulders. So I learned that sort of as an alternative. And that's sort of a nice representation of how I deal with injuries, because you can always train something. And in my experience, often you just need to sort of alter the exercises in a way that sort of moves around the injury. Mm-hmm. I've had a bunch of, I have this chronic case of tendonitis in my mm-hmm. elbow. So on the outside here, I also had the golfer's version on the inside, but mostly it's the one on the outside that that hits me. And at least for 4 months, 4 or 5 months each year, I struggle with this.
In the cold season?
Oh well, not necessarily.
Okay.
There's no real pattern. It just sometimes flares up, and I always know what to do, because it's I just need to do different grip variations. Mm-hmm. For example, training one arm pull up is usually triggering this pain, mm-hmm. but it's only painful in the bottom motion mm-hmm. if I have a supinated grip. Mm-hmm. And it's also painful in the top range of motion if mm-hmm. I have a pronated grip.
Okay.
So I figured doing it on rings, where I start with a pronated grip, and then end up in a then I don't feel the pain at all.
Okay.
You know, practicing for planche 360s. At some point, I landed on top of my thumb with my whole body on top of it, sort of. Mm-hmm. And I totally fucked up my thumb or my... I don't remember what this joint is called anyways. Mm-hmm. But I ended up having to have a cast on this and immobilize it for a couple of months. But I figured out that, okay, I can't handstand doing this unless I do it on my fists. So for 2 months, I was like doing 90-degree push-ups and handstand push-ups on my fists to sort of walk around the injury.
Wow.
And I always find a way. And sometimes if I'm like totally immobilized due to upper body injury, then I'd focus on flexibility and lower body mobility. And many cases I end up learning new things when I'm injured because I have to focus on other things that doesn't hurt. And that's how I also got into training for the one arm handstand push-up, which was my AC joint that sort of got loose, and I couldn't do any horizontal pushing. It was like 1.5 years ago, and I was doing a lot of 90 degree push-up variations to make my handstand pushing difficult enough for maximum strength training. And then I couldn't do any of the horizontal pushing because of this AC joint injury. So I needed to find a way to, because vertical pushing didn't hurt at all. So I needed to find a way to make the vertical pushing hard enough. So I ended up starting to train towards the one-arm handstand push-up, which I'm still doing. I'm still far away though, but I have this dream of doing it one time in the future. Injuries tend to sort of be an eye-opener and also forces me to focus on things that I've been neglecting before.
Well, I think that's an inspiration for everybody who is dealing with injuries, etc., to just work around it and to be creative and still listen to your body, I guess.
But yeah, I'm not saying that people should just keep pushing it. I mean, you need to learn to know your body and to if it hurts, you definitely shouldn't do it, especially if it hurts more after. But just doing nothing is generally not a good idea either, because depends on the injury. If you broke your arm, then obviously you need to stay still for a couple of months. But generally, training is good for recovery. You just need to adjust it.
True. Nice. To sum up, we're closely coming to an end of the interview. What are the three main things that you want to give to the listener to improve his workout and his results?
Stay open-minded and experiment with things, and train smart. Be smart when you're injured. And have fun.
Nice. Yes. At the end, we always have some quick questions, quick answers. What do you prefer, pizza or burger?
Pizza.
Pizza, okay. Are you a dog or a cat person?
Dog.
Dog, okay. Do you have a favorite location for holidays?
Anywhere warm.
Okay. Yeah, the German guy, the Norwegian guy sitting here in the cold in the winter and dreaming of, I don't know, Thailand and all these warm places.
But I do enjoy going to places where I can climb or scuba dive but you can do that so many places, so it's hard to choose.
And you're also doing winter sports, right?
Yes. But that I can do in Norway.
Yeah, that's true. Do you have a favorite calisthenics athlete, somebody, or top three?
Simon Ada, Simonster, mm-hmm. would probably be my favorite. Yes.
Okay. It's funny. He will be the episode before you. Interview guest before. Do you have a favorite book that you want to recommend?
No. I mean, I'm doing my PhD and I've been studying for so many years now. I never had time to enjoy books that are not academic. Mm-hmm. And okay. I mean, I could, I could, uh, I mean, I could talk about a power engineering book, but that's probably not too interesting.
Okay. If you could only follow one person on Instagram, who would it be? Got you.
I would follow my girlfriend.
Okay. Good answer. The best calisthenics event you've ever visited?
I really enjoyed the World Cup stages in Jermala. I've been there 2 or 3 times, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Yeah. We're coming to an end. How can people get in touch with you? How can they learn from you? Yes.
Well, Instagram, obviously. Sondre Berg, with an underscore in between. But I also started a YouTube channel quite recently, so there's not too much content yet, but there is more coming. There's already quite a lot, but... And I also have my website, which is bergmovement.com, where you can get access to some recorded follow-along classes, mostly for beginners, but also people who want to get sort of an insight into how I structure the workouts and what I focus on when training strength movement. There's some handstanding there too. And I have this handstand course on the Graphy app, which can also be found on my website, just clicking through the links on my website there.
Great. We will also put all the links in the description. So everybody who wants to check out your crazy videos on you on Instagram, your new content on YouTube or your website and the app, everything is in the description. Thanks a lot for your time, Sondre. I am really happy that we realized this, and thanks for everyone listening till the end and also asking to interview you, because it was a really insightful interview, different kind of athlete, different kind of training method. And yeah, thanks everyone listening to this over an hour of content. And if you like this episode, give it a thumbs up, give it a comment, who should be interviewed next. Thanks for your support. And Sondre, you can say goodbye to everyone and you have the last word.
All right. Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. And thanks to all the listeners. If you managed to listen through this hour of endlessly talking, I hope you found some good lessons and some inspiration, and feel free to send me personal messages on Instagram. I usually answer everyone if you have any particular questions, and check out my courses and stuff like this. I'm just getting started with my business, so all support is appreciated, and you can expect much more to come in the future.